It's now my pleasure to introduce to you the 18th president of DePaul University, Dr. Robert G. Bottoms. Dr. Bottoms came to DePaul in 1978 as vice president for university relations, and he has served as president since 1986. A native of Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. Bottoms earned bachelor's degrees at Birmingham Southern College and Emory University, and he earned his doctorate at Vanderbilt University. His leadership has transformed DePaul. It is fair to say that the excellence of DePaul today is thanks to his leadership. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Bottoms.
Thank you very much. This room is undoubtedly filled with many emotions today. First of all, to the parents, some of you are leaving your first child with us. Some of you are leaving your last child with us. Some of you will cry all the way home. Others can't wait to get to the car. The same thing probably holds true for the students. It is an emotional time. It's an emotional time for me. As John mentioned, this is the last entering class I will have the opportunity to welcome as I'll assume a new role at the university next year. But amidst all the emotions of this day, yours and mine, I'd like to take just a few moments to talk to you about your experience at DePaul and how we will be involved together in many subjects. The first of which I want to talk about is the environment. Paul Hawken, in his book, Blessed Unrest, characterized two forms of science. First, he said there is the old science, and as Neil has already referred, the earth is gradually warming. We have rising sea levels, the loss of some species, more droughts, more floods, more hurricanes. And the old science admitted this is tough stuff, but we can adapt and somehow we will learn to live with it. But Hawken also talks about the new science and what we continue to learn and how things have been accelerated beyond what we thought just a few years ago. We have underestimated the problem. One way of expressing it is that the thermostat is already broken. The greatest warming is not at the equator, but at the north and south poles. And temperatures are rising and releasing greenhouse gases so much that a major release could occur over the next 40 years. And in fact, if that does happen, some of the new science predicts that our planet could be transformed into a desert we would not recognize. And once that happens, no change we would want to make in energy use could affect the outcome. This is scary stuff. And what I want to point out today, as we embark on a year-long emphasis on the environment, is that we face problems that we will not be able to solve by ourselves. Even if we, by some magical wave of a wand, could make America environmentally perfect, we would not solve the global issues. Instead, we will have to learn cooperation with other countries, India and China and Europe and Africa, South America. Sustainability, we are beginning to understand, cannot be regarded as somebody else's problem. That if we just don't think about it, somebody will solve and one day it will go away. Neil mentioned that Bill McKibben, the author of Deep Economy, will be with us in October. And one of the things he will point out, I'm sure when he is here, as he did in his book, is that the problems I'm alluding to are very sophisticated. And they require a lot of education. Perhaps McKibben says even a new paradigm, even a new way of looking at things. Because isn't it true for most of us, throughout our lives, we have equated more with better? I know as a young boy growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, first person in my family to go to college, I wanted to use my education to be better off than my parents. And I was pretty sure I could do that. I'm sure my parents had the same feeling about their parents, and maybe you as incoming students have the same thing, same feelings about your parents. But we can't assume that more will always be better, and we can no longer assume that everything will continue to grow the way it has grown all of our lives, because the limits of sustainability may say that more is impossible. A couple of examples of what McKibben is talking about. Many of us, many people in the business community have spent a lot of energy exploring new relationships with China as a blooming and blossoming economy. Let me just cite two interesting statistics that point out our worldwide problem. Do you realize if China matched America in automobile ownership, meaning they owned as many cars per person as we own in this country, we would have 1.1 billion more cars? And even if they were clean cars, they would produce more carbon dioxide than the whole rest of the world. Do you realize if China drove cars like we drive, they would use all of the oil the world produces and still need a 15 million extra barrels every day? It just shows us the extent of our problem. And such an analysis like this is neither liberal nor conservative. It doesn't belong to one political party or another. It belongs to science, and mostly it is different. And if we are to solve our problems, one of the things I want to say to you today as you start your DePauw experience is we not only have to learn science, we not only have to adapt the way we live, we have to learn to cooperate. There is an old American Indian saying, the shadow of the past grows longer and longer, and the future grows shorter. Well, now as you sit there, eagerly anticipating the excitement of the day and a new experience, everything I've talked about, you say, is negative. But Mr. Hawken in his book also points out that we have some wonderful opportunities. In Blessed Unrest, he points out the history of millions of organizations throughout the world that are beginning to work towards sustainability. And I think there are two facts that are inescapable. One, he says, if we look at the facts and we are not pessimistic, we're looking at the wrong facts. But if we look at the people who are getting involved in the movement and we are not optimistic, then we don't have a heart. We're living in a time when the world is becoming such a small community and we are so mutually dependent upon one another. We've talked in the past about the business interest among countries, the ideas and the goods and the services. But now we're beginning to realize that if we have a true program of sustaining the universe, globalization means we need to cooperate one with another. The future is watching what we will do. How will we react? We have worked so hard at DePauw in getting ready for you to come into our community. And we have attempted to create the kind of community that has enough diversity in it from people all over the world and all over this country, 17% minority, 6% international, and if we reach our goals, by the time your class graduates, we'll have not 49, but we'll have 200 international students here. That we've created a laboratory. So you can begin to learn to cooperate with people from other cultures so that we can solve some of our common problems. So my advice to you is to take advantage of this laboratory. meet and greet and interact and learn from the students in your class who may come from a different culture, from a different background. We need this kind of cooperation, this kind of learning, if we're to change the way we live over the next few decades. I want to tell you three stories that some of you are partially familiar with, and then I want to relate them together. Most of you know the story of Henry David Thoreau. You read his Civil Disobedience in high school, and if you didn't read it in high school, you'll read it while you're a student here. Thoreau refused to pay his poll tax. He refused for two reasons. First, the poll tax kept poor people from voting. And secondly, Thoreau wanted to protest the war with Mexico. Well, he refused to pay his poll tax. He went to jail in Middlesex County, not very far from Walden Pond. He only spent one night there. It didn't cost him very much. But then not many people did go to jail in the 1800s for protesting injustice. Later in his life, influenced by Emerson, he wrote Civil Disobedience. Second story, it's about Mohandas Gandhi, who was tremendously influenced by Thoreau. He first read Civil Disobedience in 1906. And he wrote, Thoreau taught nothing he was not prepared to practice. Out of this experience and this involvement with this text, Gandhi developed the tenets for civil disobedience, which you also probably learned in high school. Three, if you object to some law or policy, try to get it changed, try to get it removed. But then if you can't, you might find it necessary to break the law, but if you do, you have to undergo the consequences. You might be arrested, as was Thoreau, and you will respond in a nonviolent way. The teachings, short version of Gandhi, based on what he learned in part from Thoreau. Story number three, over 50 years later, about Martin Luther King. It was in December of 1955, as I said, 50 years after the first nonviolent protest in South Africa, when Rosa Parks, who had studied nonviolence at Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, sat in the front of the bus and refused to move, and she was put into jail. She was arrested. And there in Montgomery, Alabama, not far from where I grew up, the Montgomery Improvement Association was started. And a very young minister who did not intend to assume a leadership position, Martin Luther King, who later wrote he wished he had not accepted the presidency of the Montgomery Improvement Association, was elected president. At first, according to some of his biographers, King was so afraid for his life, he even petitioned all the way to the governor of the state of Alabama for a permit to carry a gun. And then one of his associates introduced him to the work of Gandhi and the work of nonviolence. And he and his fellow workers used nonviolence to change race relations in this country forever. Now, why did I tell these three stories? They are related in that there are some common strands that connect Thoreau and Gandhi and King. And the common strand, perhaps, is that what they studied, what they learned, taught them how they would participate in the world. So how then will you participate in the world? I hope, and all of us hope, that you will use your education at DePaul to learn to participate in the world, to make a very positive difference, to not simply allow life to wash you over and you'll be dependent on someone else to solve problems. There have been so many successful people, important people, life-changing people who have attended this school before you. Lee Hamilton, who was co-chair of the 9/11 Commission, one day sat not in this room, but in a freshman convocation much like yours. Today, he's one of the major movers for peace in the world. Our commencement address last spring was given to us by Karen Ebizade, who's an Undersecretary General of the United Nations, talking about her experience at Nepal and how she learned to be a peacemaker. This fall, we opened the Janet Prindle Institute for Ethics. Janet was the first woman partner in her investment firm and was a specialist in socially responsible investing. And another DePaul luminary, whom you no doubt know, Barbara Kingsoffer, the author, gave the commencement address here not many years ago, and she too talked about how she had the experience of learning things in class at DePaul that introduced her to the love of the environment. They sat where you sat. They sat where you're sitting now. And I bet you, if you could interview them, they had no idea when they were in the first year of college they would ever have a career like the ones they have had. But they used their education and what they learned to make tremendous contributions to this world. Last week, Barbara Kingsoffer was quoted in a magazine and saying the following: "In terms of the environment, I can only offer individual encouragement and the promise that small changes in our lives, multiplied by thousands, add up to a revolution. We can't wait for radical conservation measures to be imposed on us by our government. That takes a courage that our political system can probably never muster, no matter who's in charge. But the way I look at it, the way I think of it, is that we are in charge, individually and collectively." So I trust that DePaul, you will read your text carefully. You will have your imagination stimulated. You will learn to live with determination. You will leave this place in 4 years determined to use your education to make a difference in the world. That's what I hope for you. That's what our faculty hope for you. But I have to tell you, there are some cynics about you and your generation. In a frivolous little book I read this summer called What Happy People Know, Dan Baker characterized your generation like this. He said, "You are the students who are members of the Royal Order of the Lucky Sperm Club. You were born on third base, and you think you hit a triple." Well, I don't know about that. But what he's trying to say is that we face some problems in the future that you've not had to face in your 17 or 18 years. And we live in a world, as I tried to describe, where we just can't imagine somebody else will solve our problems. And we're so interrelated, we're going to have to learn to cooperate with others if indeed we sustain this world. We do face significant new problems, but our hope is that in the future, some of you, I would spread that to say, I hope all of you can walk in the paths of those who have gone before you. And they've studied the text, and the texts have impacted their lives. It's happened with the luminaries I mentioned, with Martin Luther King, with Gandhi, with Thoreau, using their thought to participate in the world. So think of the problems of the world. They'll not take care of themselves. And we at DePaul won't solve all the problems of the world. But we have what I referred to with the faculty yesterday when I made a similar address. We have our little platoon here. Our little community of 2,300 students and 230 faculty, and a group of administrators who care to make your experience a good one. Our little platoon dedicated to help you learn to participate in a more healthy world. In closing, let me say we will open the Janet Prindle Institute for Ethics this fall, and several faculty members and I spent a lot of time thinking of various sayings and quotations from the past that might describe our work and what we hope to achieve with you. And the one quote that I would leave with you is from a man I've mentioned already, Martin Luther King, who said, "Our lives end the day we become silent about things that matter." Our goal at DePauw is to help your minds to grow, and our hope is that you will learn never to be silent about things that really matter. Thank you.